You need to get your finances in order. You need to make sure before you go too far down this path that you are likely to qualify and that you can afford this. There's tons of mortgage calculators online. I recommend you get into it and you look at it, and you need to enter in your information and you need to figure out whether your income is sufficient. And if you say, well, Chris, I don't know if I qualify, I'm not asking you whether you qualify. I don't need you to worry about front-end ratios and back-end ratios. I need you to ask yourself, is this feasible for you to manage with your income and your expenses? And if you're spending more than 55% of your overall income on the backside after your expenses on just your mortgage payment, it's probably too much house for you. And that really is your back-end ratio. And I'm paraphrasing and watering down a lot, so all the people, trolls, don't get at me pretty hard. You want to figure out if it's economically viable for you, okay? Start interviewing agents. Start going through that process, because the one thing you need to figure out right away is what your price range is. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Higher Standard Podcast, where we give you ultra premium, unfiltered truth when it comes to building your wealth and curating the lifestyle of your dreams. No games, no drama, and no shenanigans. I am your host, Chris Nahibi, and I'm here to help you distill the immense amount of information and disinformation out there on the interwebs and give you the opportunity to choose a higher standard for yourself. There are no gurus here, and no one gives a damn about how wealthy you look. I'm an attorney and a banker, amongst other things. Does that mean you should listen to me? Hell no. This is just full disclosure that while we talk about money, wealth, law, investing, and a lot of related topics, you should always speak to your own advisors for an opinion tailored to your unique investment perspective. I am obligated to tell you that nothing contained in this show is in fact legal or investment advice and is being provided solely for entertainment purposes. So sit back, relax your mind, and get ready for a different kind of podcast where we elevate your baseline in crispy, high-resolution audio. This isn't a different standard. It's the higher standard. Okay, welcome back. This time around, I want to do something a little bit different. Instead of my usual trash talking or calling people out or complaining about the world, I want to provide something that's really of value. And you know, with my background, I've got a kind of unique oversight into so many different areas where I think I can help in a lot of ways. I want to talk about providing the ultimate guide for buying a home. And you don't have to be a first-time home buyer to really get some value out of this. You can probably get some value out of this for anybody who's in the business, because I'm going to give you some legal spin, I'm going to give you some lender spin, and I'm definitely going to give you the real estate side of things. So let's jump right on into it. And let's talk about how you get this process started. A lot of people are going to go online to sites like Zillow and Redfin. That's where they're going to get their first taste of seeing what's out there and trying to put together an idea, a plan of whether they're ready to buy another home or not. It might be you have a need for more space. It might be you just want something cooler. It might just be you want to relocate. There's a lot of reasons why people do it. But one of the biggest misconceptions is that there are certain types of real estate agents that are solely, strictly buyer's agents and seller's agents. And while that's true, any licensed real estate agent can represent you for a buy or a sale. Now, some of them choose to specialize in one or the other because that's just kind of the niche that they fit in. But real estate agents are all the same. They're all licensed the same way through the Department of Real Estate in every single state. And there's two real distinctions you need to know. There's a real estate broker, which is the responsible party, and there's a real estate agent, right? So the real estate agent has to have a reporting broker they report to, and that broker has to be responsible for everyone in that particular firm. A lot of franchises will have a broker of record who's responsible for managing all the agents there. Typically speaking, a broker takes a cut. Sometimes it's a flat fee. Sometimes it's a percentage. So whatever your real estate agent makes, the broker will likely get some portion of there. There's obviously the big money franchises, the Coldwell Bankers, the, you know, Prudentials, all the names you know, obviously Berkshire Hathaway and, you know, Keller Williams and all the things that, you know, once upon a time existed and still exist to this day. And they change their names and they go through acquisitions and mergers, but it's all the same concept, right? It's just real estate agents. So some people will tell you to start with a buyer's agent. I always recommend not doing that. I recommend getting to know the market, getting to know the place you want to buy on your own. Zillow values, Redfin values, all these automated value systems, they're not necessarily what I would call accurate unless you're looking at tract homes, in which they're, you know, generally okay. But you're not going to get the subject matter expertise that you would get from a qualified real estate agent. And if you don't know one, you owe it to yourself to talk to a couple. to figure out which one you can hook up with and you believe has your best interest. Because they're supposed to be a fiduciary. They're supposed to be an extension of you and they're supposed to represent you. And if you don't trust your real estate agent or you don't feel like that person's working for your benefit, you need to find somebody who is. Because here's the way this works. You, as the buyer, don't really pay a commission. The seller pays the commission for their agent and for the agent that brings the buyer, you there, right? In some cases, it's somewhere between 2 and 2.5%. It can go below that. It can go above that. But 2 to 2.5% is probably your average range across the country, at least for single family residential real estate. It might vary a little bit for commercial. So why is this important to you? Well, if you're picking an agent as a buyer, you're really deciding whether that person is going to get a commission from somebody else or not. It does not come out of your pocket at all. Now, if a good agent will build rapport, will build a relationship with you, if you ultimately try to sell, they'll expect you to call them because they have a relationship with you. And a good agent will know how to navigate that. But you as a buyer should command the respect that you deserve and that you're going to get these people a commission if you can get a deal to work. And in this market, that's difficult. Step number two. You need to get your finances in order. You need to make sure before you go too far down this path that you are likely to qualify and that you can afford this. There's tons of mortgage calculators online. I recommend you get into it and you look at it and you need to enter in your information and you need to figure out whether your income is sufficient. And if you say, well, Chris, I don't know if I qualify. I'm not asking you whether you qualify. I don't need you to worry about front end ratios and back end ratios. I need you to ask yourself, is this feasible for you to manage with your income and your expenses? And if you're spending more than 55% of your overall income on the backside after your expenses on just your mortgage payment, it's probably too much house for you. And that really is your back end ratio. And I'm paraphrasing and watering down a lot, so all the people, trolls, don't get at me pretty hard. You want to figure out if it's economically viable for you, okay? Start interviewing agents, start going through that process, because the one thing you need to figure out right away is what your price range is. And once you figure that out, then you should start looking at homes. And I always say, figure out your price range first, because if you don't do that first, it's going to be incredibly difficult for you to narrow down what you should be looking for. And the last thing you want to do is spend time looking at properties you can't afford. Now, at this point in time, a smart real estate agent will introduce you or ask you to get a pre-approval letter right away before you start looking at homes, because some homes will actually not allow you to see the property unless you have a pre-approval letter from your lender, proof of funds from for your down payment, and of course, you have to show a willing and ableness to buy. So when you think about it in that context, they want to see that you're ready to buy before you even look at a home in some cases. And it's not always like that, but this market is crazy. This market is one of those markets where a selling agent can really dictate what they're willing to do. And normally, in a normal economy, you know, you don't have selling agents say, hey, man, we're going to list this on Thursday and we're going to be reviewing offers next Tuesday at noon. That is such an entitled position that's not normal at all. But in this economy right now, that's happening a lot because there's not enough inventory in the market. There's more buyers out there than can actually get homes. So people are really getting the bidding wars, and you layer in some of the added nuances in the economy, like, you know, the fact that interest rates are at an all-time low, really. And you've seen this just tremendous amount of volatility in the economy when you talk about how people are working from home, you know, what their expectations are, obviously with COVID and the pandemic and people's ideas of what the home life, you know, all that is changing. And because of that, the market is literally on fire. In some areas, 24, 25, 26, 27% increases in 1 year in value. And that has largely to do with the bidding wars and the lack of inventory that's going on. So it's a really tough time to be a buyer right now. On average, according to the National Association of Realtors, people are making up to 8 offers before they get one accepted. So a good real estate agent will go into this telling you not to get discouraged. You get that pre-approval letter from a lender they introduce you to. You're going to get your proof of funds together, showing that you have the money for your good faith deposit. And then you're going to use your purchase contract, your purchase offer, to make an offer on a property that you like, should you find one that you like. Now, the fun just is really getting started right there, because in this market, here's where the crazy shit starts to happen, right? And in A good real estate agent is going to take you through an informed educational process, show you some reports in the area, tell you what they think of the property. You're going to make sure that it fits all the things that you want. You're going to do some comparisons of value. They might point you to dollar per square foot to let you know how it stacks up to other properties. They might show you some similarly situated properties that are currently for sale and stuff that's currently that's recently been sold. And these are all the same things that the appraiser is going to use to come up with their comparable sales approach to value. So it's really important that an agent has that information for you to make an informed offer. Now, you could get several responses from a seller. They could accept it. In this economy, though, that's rare unless you're making egregiously high offers. Another fun fact for you, for the first time ever on history that I'm aware of, and frankly, I think this is something from the National Association of Realtors as well, on average, homes are selling above their list price. People are bidding them above the price that the seller is asking for on average. And that has never happened. On average, it's typically been below the list price because you have a lot of homes that sell below or at list, but not a lot to sell so far above that it actually pulls the average up. So that is obviously an unprecedented set of circumstances as well. So if they don't accept your offer, they can counteroffer directly to you and say, hey, we want to change the price. We want to change the terms, right? They can do something called a multiple counteroffer, which is painful because they give you a special type of counteroffer to let you know that they counteroffered multiple parties, or they can give you the ultimate middle finger, the ultimate power play. And they can tell you all, give us your highest and best. So you submitted an offer, let's say for $1 million on a property that's listed for $900,000. They say, give us your highest and best. And you have to go, do I bid against myself and offer more? Am I the highest bidder? You have no information, nothing. And that scenario, those last two, the multiple counteroffer and that give us your highest and best, have been happening so frequently in this market that is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, I've had buyers just say, Chris, what the fuck, man? And you know what? That's a totally normal response. That's a totally normal, appropriate response because it's crazy to think that you're in a bidding war against yourself and you get so emotionally connected to these properties. And that's my first tip. If you're going to go into this process, you cannot be emotionally connected to a property. You cannot. Even if you get under contract, things can and will go wrong. One of the most reoccurring things I'm seeing in some of these counter offers, and I'm seeing them on the initial offers too, and this has never happened before in my professional career, you typically have contingencies for appraisal, right? My offer is subject to contingent to the appraisal. Financing, my offer is subject contingent to getting financing. And inspection. If I find something wrong here in my inspection, it's subject to, you know, making sure the property is in good shape. People are waiving those. They're just saying, look, I'm going to buy the property. I don't give a shit what's wrong with it. I don't care where it appraises. But that creates trouble as you go through the financing process because the lender is going to give you the lower of the purchase price or the appraised value. So how does this play out for you? If you ultimately get under contract and you buy a property for $1.2 million, but it appraises for $1 million, the lender is going to give you their maximum loan to value, let's say in this case, 75% off that $1 million number because they're going to take the lower of the purchase price or appraised value. In this case, it's $1 million. So that's $750,000, which means $250,000 has to come from your pocket plus the $200,000 to get up to the purchase price of $1.2 million. So instead of being a 75% of $1.2 million, you wind up putting a lot more money down. And that's a risk that's been going on. And typically speaking, a lender will require 6 months of PITI in reserve, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. If you're a first-time home buyer in this market and you get forced to overbid a property, you might not have enough liquidity left over for that much PITI. And that could be a deal breaker for anybody trying to get into the space. That's insanity, but that's how crazy the market is, right? After you get through negotiating offers, and let's say you happen to get into contract, you have to immediately take your good faith earnest money deposit. That'll be defined by your purchase contract. Your real estate agent will let you know that. You open escrow, you open title, and you're off to the races. Your lender will then order an appraisal. The appraisal will go through their approaches to value. Usually it's the cost approach and comparable analysis, but again, different appraisers, different markets do things a lot differently. There's a whole guidance for this under USPAP if you want to look it up. That's not really important to you. What you need to understand is the lender will order the appraisal. You will pay for it. Most lenders will order through a third-party service called an AMC. So there's a neutral third party in between them so they can't influence the value. And the value is what it is. You can't really encourage it or discourage it. At least you're not supposed to be able to influence it whatsoever. It comes back. That's what you deal with. And in markets that are moving up this fast, appraisers are really reticent to move up their appraised value so fast because it's a cyclical, vicious cycle. Appraised values go up in the area and property values go up. Lenders can make bigger loans. They do make bigger loans. More people come into the area, start bidding up the property. Property values go up. Lenders make bigger loans. And then it all comes tumbling down when values get too high and lenders are overextended. Once values go down, they're not going to take your property back. The value goes down. They're now overextended on a property that they lend too much money on. Then the lender's going to have some requirements for you. No matter who you are, no matter what your financial position, your lender will come back to you and they'll give you essentially the proctology exam. And I'm a guy who does this for a living professionally. Just, we have to document things under the Dodd-Frank rule. There's an ability, Dodd-Frank Act, there's the ability to repay rule. In the United States, we as lenders, because of what happened during the Great Recession and all these stated income programs, we can't do something that could be considered predatory lending. So we have to document that you have the actual ability to repay. And if we're selling it in the secondary market to a government, a GSE or government sponsored enterprise, Freddie, Fannie, we have to meet their requirements, which are very detailed, as you might imagine. So lenders will come back to you asking for all sorts of updated information, updated liquidity, updated, you know, insurance, all the fun stuff. You're also going to receive seller disclosures at some point in time. And when you receive the seller disclosures, you're going to have things like lead-based paint, which is a federal required disclosure. You have 10 days, you know, for review for that lead-based paint. You're going to have a natural hazard apart. You're going to have a seller property questionnaire. You're going to have a pest inspection if you required one, if you didn't waive it. And you're going to have some preliminary title report information as well to make sure the person who's selling the property is the actual owner and they have the right to do so. You need to review all of those. A good real estate agent will walk you through and encourage you to read every single term. If for nothing else, for the fact that you understand exactly what it is you're buying, these disclosures are required for a reason. It's because they are important. It's up to you to read them and ask questions because there's a lot of agents out there who aren't sophisticated, who don't even understand them themselves. One of the things you're required to get is a homeowner's insurance policy. I use Farmers because that's just who I've always used, but there are a ton of people out there to get one from. That's the PITI. Most lenders will require you to do something called impounding, essentially taking your annual insurance, dividing by 12, and every single month you pay 1/12 of that payment. They'll hold it in an account for you, and they'll pay your insurance policy for you to make sure that you do it. They do the same thing with your taxes. That's why your actual payment is going to be principal, interest, taxes, and insurance instead of just principal and interest on your loan. Now, there are programs out there like interest-only loans. There are lenders that will allow you not to impound for taxes and insurance. You're just paying principal and interest, or in some cases, if you're just paying interest. If you're a first-time home buyer or you don't have the discipline to control your cash flow and manage that, that's not a good way to go. You should impound. There's a lot of people who are going to disagree with me with that, but I'll tell you, as somebody who's in the business, I impound to this day. I'm a little bit unique in that way, and that I'm a real estate investor who impounds. Most real estate investors prefer to control their cash flow, invest that money throughout the year, and then be able to disperse it and pay their own taxes and insurance as it comes up. I just have too many properties to deal with like that. Then after you go through all this, you're gonna finish up your inspections. In your purchase contract, there's gonna be periods of time. This varies state by state, so I'm not gonna give specifics as it relates to your inspection periods, right? What your expiration date for those contingencies for appraisal, for property inspection, and for financing are due. When you go through and inspect the property, me as a general contractor, it's easy for me to go through with my clients. We look for things, but we actually hire third-party inspections to come through and do that. So you don't really necessarily need someone to do it. It just adds a little bit of extra value while you're there. You can bring anybody you want, and it's your time to be in the property. It's your time to look at it. It's your time to go through and do all those things with your agent. You should be allowed to be alone with your agent there, and your agent should have a home inspection coming in. If you required mold and pest inspection for termite, they're going to come in and do those as well. I like to do extra added inspections there. It's worth the money, so we'll do sewer. You know, if there's a septic tank, we'll do that too. We get into the property to the extent that we can and make sure we find anything, because what you can do is go back. Unless you waive this in your original purchase agreement, a lot of people are doing that now. It's just crazy. I never recommend it. You can actually go back to the seller and say, hey, X, Y, and Z is wrong with the property. We need to have credits for, you know, this and that to fix it or repair, or, you know, you didn't disclose this and there's issues here we didn't know about. You really want to make sure that the major areas that you can get into that are really, really expensive are covered. And to give you an idea, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, your roof and your foundation, these are things that are the big, big costs. So you always want to renovate a bathroom or renovate a kitchen. But these five things, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, roof, and foundation, they can make or break the whole situation. So you want to make sure you have a certified inspector come through. Your representative, your agent should have a number of people that they work with. You can always recommend your own. It's totally fine. Then if everything goes well and you haven't gone back and forth and had any issues with inspections or you haven't waived them, wherever you're at, you have a period where you have to remove the contingencies because you're all ready to go forward, meaning your financing is in order, the property looks good, the appraisal is good, you're ready to go. Your lender will then go through the process of that final approval, and you will do something called a final walkthrough, where you'll actually walk through the property to make sure nothing has changed since when you first came into the property to now. So you want to make sure that, you know, toilets are flushing, there's no water leaking, there's been no material changes to the property. A lot of times I'll see stuff like blinds and all that stuff gone. You want to make sure all of that is exactly on par. You don't want to delay closing if you can. You want to find quick solutions because this is a period of time where you're just coming through to make sure it is what it is. You do want to make sure the property's clean, though. And if it's not clean, your agent should definitely reach out and have them do a third-party professional cleaning or have it professionally cleaned in some way, shape, or form. Now you're going to sign loan and escrow documents. They'll send out a notary to you in most cases. You don't actually have to go there, or you'll sign it at escrow, or if you're in escrow closing state anyway, some states are attorney closing states. You're going to need your driver's license. There's going to be locality, you know, different rules for different states. Plan to spend some time there. You can walk through and read every single one of your loan documents while you're there. It is painfully long. If you really feel the need to do that, I always recommend getting that information in advance. And having a sophisticated representative in the financing side will really help you get through that. If you can go direct to a bank or a credit union to get your best possible rate, definitely do that. If you have a more challenging financial position and you have difficulties getting financing, a broker is always a good advocate. I don't believe that everybody needs a broker, but you know, I came from that. My father's a broker. I can totally appreciate there is a need and a space for it. A broker will charge you a fee for those services. Banks are generally a little bit more cost effective, but knowing which bank is the right fit for you and which one will finance you is difficult. The best place to start, whoever you have your primary deposits with, that's where you start. If you have a checking account, Wells Fargo, B of A, or you're smart and have one with your local community, regional bank, that's where you start. You talk to them. You find out if they can make the loan happen. All goes well. You sign loan documents. That money is then wired by you to, by your lender for you to escrow. And any remaining funds that you have to deposit, the balance of funds between your good faith deposit and your initial deposit, those have to be made and put in the escrow. And guess what? Next up is close of escrow. And at this point, you have the keys to a brand new, wonderful home, or at least new to you. And I'll tell you, I've done this a lot of times. At this point, I don't even know how many times I've done it. I've done it enough to where I can tell you that it is always stressful. There's always some level of anxiety. I don't care how wealthy you are or how much you might not care. Buying a property is always challenging. It's never going to be an easy walk in the park. I often tell people to get a real estate license. And the reason why is it takes a little bit of the edge off of this level of anxiety. And if you recall, when we first started this conversation, if you're a real estate agent and you're underneath a broker, you can actually take a portion of your commission as a real estate agent buying a property for yourself and use that towards your down payment. I have done that. I did that on my first property. I've done that on every property since then. I continue to do it. It's the reason why I have a real estate brokerage to this day. I'm actually a licensed broker, but it started off of me being a real estate agent, and that's the way it worked. And it makes total sense. Every property you buy, if the commission's 2.5%, in my case, I'm a broker, I keep all that money. I can use that towards my down payment. That's a significant chip. That's a significant, you know, piece of the puzzle you're taking right off. I always recommend that. I'm here to help. I know these things are challenging. I know you don't know who to trust. I know, you know, you might have a friend who's a real estate agent. You might know somebody who's in the lending space. But to put all the pieces together, it's challenging. It really is scary. It really is intimidating. And it can be overwhelming. And even today, as somebody who considers himself to be somewhat of a subject matter expert, I get in situations that still boggle my mind. It's crazy. I've told most of my friends and family to wait. My wife and I are waiting to buy a bigger place ourselves. We made some offers, and it got crazy too, and we decided to hold off a little bit. It's just one of those things where it's up to you. The one last piece of advice I'll give you, and I apologize, I know this particular episode has gone long, is this. Never buy a home with an investor's mindset. I'm not saying you shouldn't look for a deal. What I am saying is the utility of you living in a place that you want to live, being around people that you want to be around, and having the things that you have, the creature comforts that you want in your home, assuming you can afford it, that utility over time is worth more than the difference that you would pay looking for a really, really good deal. It'll bring you more joy every single day, and happier people lead happier lives. They go to work, they make more money, they have an overall joy you just can't put a tangible price tag on. So don't think of your home in the context of, I need to get a good deal, I need to get this, you know, I need to get this value out of it. You're buying a home that you and your family live in for utility. If you're younger and you're house hacking, that's a different set of circumstances. I respect that. If you're younger and you don't have a family, and your mindset is, I want to grow, and you're looking for deals, you know, duplex, triplex, this all still applies. You just got a little bit more due diligence to do, and you got to do one extra thing. Check the market rents to make sure it's economically viable to rent out those extra units and see where that stuff is at. Your agent should definitely help with that. Your appraisal, if they know what it is, will actually help you with a rent comp analysis. And if not, the bank will ask for it without your request anyway, because they want to know in a worst case event scenario of default if they can rent the thing out and make some money and at least cash flow. That's it for this week. I hope this provided some value. I know it was a lot. I know it was a lot of boring stuff, but at the same time, a lot of people, believe it or not, don't know the answers to questions, haven't been through this experience or been through this experience and like, was that normal? If you think it was helpful to you, please share it with your friends. Please follow me on Instagram, TikTok. We do a lot of stuff like this in both short form format. You want a longer form format, a more educational process. You can also catch us on YouTube, all the same username at Chris Nahibi. Thank you. Appreciate you. Hit that subscribe button. Hit that like button. Follow me. Join the podcast. Let's go. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation on the Higher Standard Podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe or follow on whatever platform you were listening to this on. If you like this episode, please write a review and share it with us. You're getting the show up and running right now, so every message, every review, and every note counts. This show exists to showcase what's possible when leaders decide to uphold a higher standard for their businesses, their investments, their families, and most importantly, themselves. If you want to see more of my content, I post daily on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube, so be sure to follow me on your favorite social media platform. And with that, it is a wrap. And as always, I look forward to hanging with you all on the next episode.